We have significantly de-risked the market, understood which customer, who in the organization we are selling to, who is the user of our product, and the team as well. So in terms of fundraising, the three focus was market risk, product risk, and the team risk, and de-risking those three factors at each stage along the journey of the company helped me go to the next level.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. I've got a great interview today with Aditi Aji. She is the CEO and founder of Adrich. And very embarrassingly in this interview, I call it Aldrich, to which she politely corrected me towards the end. But it's Adrich, Adrich.io. If you want to check out the website right now, they're doing some really cool stuff in the Internet of Things space, helping large consumer brands track the usage of their products and more efficiently and effectively launch new brands and new products by tracking the usage of first-time consumers with a small monitoring device. We talk about developing the product, fundraising, getting the product sold into different departments, and a lot more. She is really sharp. I'm really bullish on not only her potential as an entrepreneur, but for the company in general. So please enjoy this conversation with Aditi Aji.
You're listening to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
Aditi, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm excited to be talking with you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I want to start off by having you explain for folks the business model of Aldrich. This is a startup Internet of Things space company, but at its base level, what service do you provide? What product do you provide? And how do you make money?
Yes. So Adrich, at the core of it, is a IoT consumer insights company, and we are a B2B startup where we help brands, the food and beverage manufacturers or the beauty manufacturers, to gain visibility on how, when, and where their product is being used once it leaves the store. Because today they have no way to get that consumer feedback on, you know, whether their product, for example, coffee, is meeting the needs of the consumer. Is it fresh enough? How long does it take for them to consume? They have stated data today. They have self-reported data from the consumer, which is through surveys and focus groups, which is inaccurate. What we are trying to do is give them that real-time, accurate feedback in terms of data-driven approach to product development to help them understand if the positioning of the product is correct, if the taste is good, a consumer is happy with the product. Because in this industry, the consumer products industry, 85% of new products fail. And this is because they don't have good research methodologies or data-driven approaches to product development. Whereas in the tech world, we have a lot of this data. It's missing in the consumer products. And that's the gap we're trying to fill through a connected smart consumption tag that we have developed in-house, which goes onto the product behind the product label. And it simulates consumer behavior, captures that data, talks Bluetooth, and sends it out to our cloud where we give it to the brands in terms of a dashboard.
Makes sense. So just to say this another way, a lot of software companies already have these type of insights because they can track how long you're on the website, how long you had the app open, how many pages you scrolled through, all these other types of data points that when it comes to a physical object, that's why it's been called the Internet of Things. You can't necessarily collect that data because sensors are big, sensors are expensive. And then when we're looking at the actual data and the value of it, as it pertains to the success of these 85% of brands that could fail, you could have information like, well, we sold 100 bottles of our juice drink today, but we don't know what percentage of people finished it. Did they take three sips and then say, oh, this is not for me? You have this positive data of look how much we sold, when in fact your brand is tanking because a lot of people are getting exposure, spending money on it, and having a bad experience. Is that a
yes.
Good summarization of what's happening?
Exactly. They wait on the sales data and they see that it spikes up. But, you know, it could very well be that people bought the product because of fun packaging, but didn't like the taste, and it sat on the shelf and eventually landed in the trash. And that affects reorder rates. So if you go by the sales data and ramp up production, sales is going to flatten out. So brands have tied up inventory. So in a nutshell, what you said is precisely what we are trying to uncover. Is the product being used at all, or is it just being bought and thrown?
And so the other aspect of what's fascinating here, and I think we're going to get some pictures and we'll add them in the show notes or in the video over on YouTube, but this sensor, part of the revolution and the projections that people are making about Internet of Things is the fact that the sensors are getting less expensive and smaller. And so therefore they can be inserted or implanted into these different things. And you showed us the original prototype, which is a little bulky. It's smaller than a pack of playing cards, but in that same family. Mm-hmm. And then now you're looking at something that's basically a thin, almost like a film or like a single playing card as opposed to the stack that can be put on a bottle. What type of products are they going on? Like where are these being implemented?
Yeah, we've had a range of products since we started. So we started with spirits, you know, the local distilleries where some of our customers in Pittsburgh, we put this particular thing on, you know, bottles in the bars, and it would collect consumption data. And we were able to give some pretty good insights to the brand owners, some of the customers here. And slowly we started expanding, right? Within 3-4 months, we got the largest beauty brand come to us. It's a multi-billion dollar beauty brand based in New York. Now we have a couple of clients in the food category, the snacking category in Chicago. We are working with the largest cleaning product company based in Silicon Valley. So we have expanded, starting from spirits now to, we've done peanut butter, moisturizer, dog food, and now cleaning products. So practically we can live in our offices because we have almost all the household products in the office for testing. So it's been pretty exciting.
So help me understand, like, the other aspect of this. So we're talking about the hardware that gets attached to the item, and then there has to be a really easy to use, valuable dashboard with all these insights. But like at a basic level, as I'm no statistician, like what type of metrics are these businesses looking for that tells them the success or not of the product, like the weight going down or how many times the bottle gets tipped over? Like what is actually being tracked?
Yes. So at a high level, it is the consumer behavior in terms of when it's being used, how often it's being used, the rate of consumption. Is it, you know, does it take 4 days or does it take 10 days to finish the product? Where it's being used, the geographic data, as well as the consumer demographics. So all of these are raw data points. And we have the ability to allow the brands to intercept the consumers at different times of usage, right? So just when you run out, they give you a coupon and ask you for feedback on their product. So we actually had some interesting insights. So people run out of peanut butter between 10 and 11:30 in the night.
I can relate to that.
It's pretty, you know, insightful in that. And then we found millennials finish peanut butter in 4 days compared to Gen X, who take 10 days to finish it. So brands can use these insights to make, you know, product categories or a snack bar only for the millennials, or target the consumer demographic and make better new products for them. In terms of coffee, right, what size of the packaging is required? Because we will know, if they know that consumers finish it on an average of 4 days, they can make sure that the consumer experience with that coffee is fresh. So the packaging size can be reduced to make it last for 4 days and keep the freshness active for 4 days, right? So those are some of those insights we are able to give.
So it's apparent how powerful and the potential that this technology has. I'm curious about the genesis story in terms of how you identified this as an opportunity and how your pre-existing skill set informed your ability to execute on this vision. Because, I mean, just the very nature of explaining what you're saying it can do and how small that is, like, that is mind-boggling for me, but I'm not a technologist. Like, so walk me through that.
Right. So the idea really started, you know, when I was studying in Carnegie Mellon, and basically it came from my background. My background is predominantly in technical product management, and I love product management and the way to position it, how to launch it in the market. And I found in the tech world that you have enough data, like you mentioned, right? You know how the app is being used, how long it's being opened and watched. And this data really helps technical product managers better improve the product. But in the physical world, there was a gap. So, you know, I brought in my supply chain background in terms of I have the MBA in supply chain. So initially, we were actually going direct to consumer, right? We were going to make an automated shopping list because it basically detects when you run out. But when we went out to the field and did consumer research, we found consumers didn't really lose sleep over, you know, not having enough salt or sugar. It was a problem, but it was not such a big problem, and they wouldn't be willing to pay for it. So with the supply chain background, we pivoted a little bit to say, okay, if consumers don't have such a big problem, it's the brands who have the problem because they don't have visibility in the end of the supply chain. So that's how we started targeting the brands and the manufacturers.
Can we stick a pin in that? Because I'm really curious about that initial, you're looking for product market fit, you're looking for customer validation. Can you talk me through how you went about testing this theory that this would be something we would sell to consumers, and then what data came back or what came back that informed that decision to make that pivot?
Yeah, so we literally stood out in the streets and, you know, in front of Whole Foods and the Walnut Street and stopped consumers and found out, like, this is a device that goes onto your product and it detects when you run out and creates automated shopping list.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, that's the hustle right there.
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of stood on the streets and got some enough data to say that, you know, while it is a nice to have, it's not a must have. And at that point, if you go direct to consumer, the price point wouldn't be something that they're willing to pay, right? And plus the distribution costs and scaling a direct to consumer electronics product has a different set of challenges. You need to market a lot and things like that. So I quickly figured that it was not a 10x value for the consumer. But then when we started interviewing brands, the excitement that I saw there was what validated the market. And we changed our business model to more data as a service business model, where we give away the labels but charge for the data as a monthly subscription. So that's how we were able to work the price point and work it in a way where we make margins and there's still a ROI for the customers. So that's how we pivoted. And there was a lot more, there was a bigger problem for the brands than for the consumers. And there was a bigger price point that they were willing to pay that justified the cost.
So how does the cost structure work for some of these enterprises that you're working with? They're massive brands. There's probably massive scale to how much data is coming in. Is it tiered based on how much is coming in? How's that work?
Yes. So we have our trial packages where we give anywhere from 100 to 1,000 consumers, and there are different price points at different volume breaks of the consumers. So, for example, a 100 consumer trial includes 100 labels, the data, the training, the support as a basic price point. And then we have the two-way survey communication, which is an automated trigger of surveys at different points of consumption. That's a different package. So it is a tiered pricing model with different volume breaks for the number of consumers that we cater to.
Gotcha. So take me through in terms of you've taken some funding on, and that's very standard when you're developing a product like this. You have the MVP. You have continued to iterate on the approach. What is your philosophy or thought process been as you've come to the fundraising realm? Because not just the larger narrative of, well, it's hard to fundraise in Pittsburgh and other things like this, but in general, trying to maintain sovereignty over your company versus having board members come in having a stake in the business. How have you approached that?
Right. From the beginning, the one thing that at least my mentors and advisors told me that was really helpful was get the customers to pay for the product. Don't give away free product. That's a good validation. So I got customers to actually pay for this thick product that doesn't look good, but the data is the product. And I was trying to validate that there's a market for the product that I'm building before I even go further with the iterations. So throughout, the focus has been customers, paying customers, and traction, and validating the market need before even, you know, investing too much in product development. That's how we went from MVP to our Gen 1, Gen 2, Gen 3 of our hardware, and the software came along to scale because we knew we were going into 100,000 units very quickly. So in terms of fundraising, that was what my core focus was. And I was able to build a story based on that, saying, hey, look, there is demand for this product. I need money to scale the business and get more customers. These things are working. These things are things that we are still validating on. But we have significantly de-risked the market, understood which customer, who in the organization we are selling to, who is the user of our product, and the team as well. So in terms of fundraising, the three focus was market risk, product risk, and the team risk, and de-risking those three factors at each stage along the journey of the company helped me go to the next level.
How hard would you say it was to fundraise here in Pittsburgh? Because that's part of the media narrative, but there's 18 different takes depending on who you talk to.
Yes, it is challenging for sure, especially I would say, you know, with the resources like Carnegie Mellon and Innovation Works, the early stage is definitely there because they bank on you and the talent of the entrepreneur. But there is the valley of death where you have early customers, there is indication of the market, but you need some time and money to actually reach to a consistent revenue stream. There you need a lot of funding. And that's where the gap financing, that's where I feel that it's harder to raise money. Once you have consistent revenue stream, then you have Series A and Series B. But that seed financing is where it's challenging, at least in my perspective.
Are you brushing into that right now or, yeah?
Yeah, so, you know, most recently we are almost closing our seed round. So it was challenging, but now we're almost towards the end of it, especially with some of the milestones and progress we have made in the last couple of months. It gained momentum and we were able to close the round.
I know that there's stuff you can and can't share about that before the announcement, but did you have to go out of Pittsburgh to find partners like that?
Yes, we do have investors from New Jersey, and I'm talking to investors from New York and Silicon Valley as well. So yes, but there have been investors in Pittsburgh as well, so there has been support, but I had to go out to get some other funding resources as well, because there were more resources on other outside of Pittsburgh. But having said that, to close out the round, a lot of local investors have also come in.
Makes sense. So when we look at the sales process for data as a service, I think that can be, I mean, enterprise sales is enterprise sales to some degree, but there is this spectrum of how people can wrap their mind around what that sale looks like. You talked about the trial and the free trial that you're offering, but can you paint any more of a picture on what that looks like in terms of meeting with key stakeholders, whether that's a makeup and cosmetics brand or a beverage brand or a food brand, getting in there, having them understand the technology, having them wrap their minds around it and the practical applications of it?
Yes. So typically in the first meeting, you know, we kind of understand what are their mystery questions around the product, if you will, right? What is missing in their world within their product set that they would love to have? And that's where we start understanding, you know, what are the data points that they're looking for. And then we ask them, you know, tell us which product and how many consumers and who is your target consumer. So these are typically are three questions to get that information. From there on, we first ask them for samples of the product, so we make sure our tech works on that, and then we give a demo on their product, and they get it. Once we give the demo, they kind of are able to wrap their minds around it. And that has been a good learning process for us as well. We are also seeing the reactions between the three generations of our hardware, how it has improved adoption, especially because our customers are very particular on what goes on to their product. So we've learned through all customer interactions on how to answer and overcome the objections and close the sale. So from there on, it's after the demo, we offer a trial package and a proposal, and then the deployment is anywhere from 2 weeks to 4 weeks. So we quickly turn around, because as is post-production, so we quickly turn around and deploy the product and get them the data immediately.
Where do the sensors get manufactured or made?
Right now, it's here locally in Pittsburgh.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
So you've alluded to having mentors, having people to bounce ideas off of. And that is another one of the things that entrepreneurs of all stages, but particularly starting off, they struggle to find that person who can be the sounding board, who's maybe walked the walk, been there before, and can provide some perspective. I'd imagine CMU plays a really large part in that. But can you speak a little bit to how you've gone about not only identifying people that can be useful resources to you, but how the steps that you've taken to sell yourself to them or to pull them in or to get them interested in what it is that you're doing?
Yes. So initially it was hard because you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
You know, you are playing with uncertainty. A lot of times you have to figure it out yourself. But lately, you know, I think as you grow into the business, you sort of find the gaps that you're trying to fill. And for example, I had issues with, you know, how do I do B2B sales? And I reached out to a B2B sales expert at that point. I had issues with, you know, how do you build the story for fundraising? And I reached out to people who are experts in that. The one thing that I felt was very useful for me was, if you're facing a problem, for example, fundraising, get a person who's on the other side of the table. So I got an investor as my mentor for fundraising. So he could think like an investor and tell the story and, you know, coach me on that. Similarly, I got a brand manager onto the team who is the end user of my product. So she could resonate with the customer when she spoke about it, right? So that really helped me get a faster feedback loop and learn quicker.
That's really powerful, because I think that a lot of the way people would chase the solution to some of those problems that you talk about would be to either, well, someone who has sold to a brand manager, someone who has pitched to a VC, but to reverse engineer it and really hear from the horse's mouth what they're looking for seems like it would be immensely clarifying.
Yes, and that has helped me because, you know, getting the person from the other side of the table, being on this side, always helps resonate better. You learn faster. You at least know what the challenges are very quickly.
Gotcha. And so when we talk about the general consumer packaged goods market, that is enormous, right?
Mm-hmm.
There isn't, in terms of like directions this can go, it's really a matter of getting into the rooms with the right people. But whether it's pickles or soda or cosmetics or what have you, there's a lot of directions that this can go. Are there specific subcategories of these consumer packaged goods that you're finding more initial resonance with, or has it kind of been all over the place?
Yes, that was definitely one of the biggest challenges, right? Because there's not only the market is big, but there are multiple use cases of the product, right? Right from automatic replenishment to consumer insights to data analytics. So I had a, you know, I had a good team to figure this out, but initially we had to get the product market fit was a little bit challenging. Now we've figured out that, you know, in terms of positioning it as a consumer insights platform is gaining the maximum traction. And food and beverage in specific has been a good place to start. One, because they have quicker innovation cycles. They're launching new products every 3 months. So it really fits well with our technology. But going further for other use cases, we are getting requests from, you know, paper towels to snack boxes to candies. So we are getting a lot of requests for other product categories. So we are ramping up product development for each of those. But right now, looks like the food and beverage has been resonating well.
And I can see also the kind of land and expand potential where a lot of the CPG companies have a whole library of brands underneath them. And if one specific brand manager underneath that large umbrella identifies it, finds it valuable, a healthy organization is going to share the tools that are working. And all of a sudden, you know, if it's Unilever and they've got iced tea and soap and all these other things, like they can start to eventually pass that around once you've proven that initial use case. So is that starting to happen? Is that the goal once you've kind of landed and executed a few times?
Exactly. So we have engaged all these brands at a corporate level. So it's just a matter of time for one product to be in the field and get them insights, and then it'll grow organically. So our focus is to build that reference customer base right now. So focus on delighting the customer, make them happy, make them fall in love with the product, because that by itself will be organic growth.
Absolutely. So my last question before we aim towards wrapping up here, Aditi, and this has been fantastic. I'm learning so much. I'm really excited about it.
Thank you.
There's also this bifurcation of consumer packaged goods that are in retail stores, convenience stores, that, you know, people are picking up and taking home with them, versus this trend of direct to consumer brands where it's getting shipped right to the house, I take it out and I operate with it. Are you playing with both of those types of companies? Is this primarily geared for retail brands? How does that work?
Right now we are focused with brands, and direct to consumer has been top projects within these brands, and it fits well with the way the technology works as well. So to answer your question, we are focused on brands who right now it's a market research tool, but eventually they're going into building their own e-commerce platform. So that's how we are working with them.
Okay. And are there any concerns that, I mean, I think this is almost more like a more meta commentary on Internet of Things in general, but like the idea of getting comfortable with the fact that it's not just my laptop in this room right now that's collecting data, and I guess my phone because it just vibrated, but like my cup and my wristband and my pants and my shoes. Like, is there friction there? Maybe that's more on the consumer side than the actual brand side, because they're thirsty for that data. But have you had that type of conversation of like, well, I don't know if I like that my bottle of Gatorade knows how much of it that I've drank?
Yes, it's interesting. And I get this question every time. And we were also concerned about that. So we said, let's try out. Okay, so we actually, it's surprising that we have had no issues with opt-in. Right from spirits, we have data, right? So people are willing to give data on spirits. In fact, they want to know their own consumption patterns. They want to know how much they drank and how much of Gatorade they had. So when we did research, the consumers are asking for this product for their own consumption data. You would want to know how much sugar and salt you're having. Instead of inputting it into an app, now the label will tell you that you had so much sugar and salt. So that's part of the value for the consumers. But also the other part is we partnered with this largest food manufacturer in Chicago, and they actually announced to the consumers that we're partnering with Adrich, a leading analytics startup, which will help us get your usage data. So they were very explicit that this label will be attached to your product when we ship it to you, and it'll collect data, and we asked for opt-in. They had a goal of 50 consumers, and we hit that goal within 30 minutes of sending out that email.
Wow.
In fact, we had to pull down the link so we didn't have more opt-in. So that was a very good validation, and that was a huge milestone for the company as well.
But it does require some degree of opt-in, I'd imagine. Like now I'm thinking about like the compliance and legal issue of knowing, like, do I know that my drink is tracking my drinking and that component of it?
Yes. For now, we are telling the consumers there is an opt-in process. In fact, they download an app initially as the one-time setup. So they know that there's something smart there and it's tracking data.
Fascinating. Well, this has really been a mind-expanding conversation for me. Thank you for taking the time to sit down with us. Before we ask the last two questions, is there anything else you're hoping to share today that I didn't give you the chance to?
I would say it's been exciting. Thanks for having me, and I got an opportunity to tell the story and the progress we have made. So I'm hoping to make an impact in Pittsburgh with the team and the talent that I'm able to get.
Well, consider me officially bullish on the potential of Aldrich and everything you got going on here. And also, just kudos to you. I don't think anyone listening to this will be able to tell that you came off a red eye last night and are operating on a low amount of sleep. That was a fantastic interview. For people that want to learn more, that want to connect, what digital coordinates can we provide in the show notes?
Yes. So our website is www.adrich.com. It's www.adrich.io, A-D-R-I-C-H. And they can also reach us at getintouch@adrich.io. And of course, I'm available on LinkedIn, Aditi RG.
Beautiful. We're going to link that all in the show notes. And I'm going to wish in my head that I had not mispronounced it earlier in the interview, now that I'm hearing you say it. So bullseye square on my back. I definitely messed that up. Thank you for rolling with the punches there. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. The last note that we always wrap up on is having our guest issue a challenge to the audience. So I want to give you the mic one final time to talk to the listeners.
I would say, being in entrepreneurship and the journey so far, it's definitely not been as glamorous as it looks from the outside. A lot of times entrepreneurs have these lonely phases there. They have self-doubt. The whole team is, banking on them. So I would say, if you can help an entrepreneur figure out something with good advice, if you've been in their shoes and if you can give some advice, I would say definitely help an entrepreneur get to the next step. There is a lot of sacrifices behind that journey. And I would say anyone who can help any other entrepreneur be successful, I think that is sort of karma. And I would myself like to give back. From absolutely. All the support that I have got.
Well, I'm absolutely positive that just this interview alone is going to help some people with some breakthrough and understand the world a little bit better. And further, I think that the spirit of that challenge is also the celebration of entrepreneurship and the celebration of the folks that are taking the risk to start new businesses, because, I mean, it's just become more and more apparent with every interview I do that these businesses really are the lifeblood of the community, of a city, of a region, whether that's giving people jobs or creating new opportunities. So I'm fully in support of that challenge, and hope that we can be helpful to everything you're doing in some way, shape, or form.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm sure I'll get some good response and positive leads from your show.
Fantastic. We just went deep with Aditi Edgy. Hope everyone out there has a fantastic day. Hey, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. This episode, like every episode, is underwritten by Piper Creative. If you are looking to create more Instagram content, launch a podcast of your own, or produce a vlog for your company or brand, we would love to have a conversation with you about how to do that more effectively and efficiently. PiperCreative.co/contact is the place to reach out. But in our next episode of Going Deep, we're going to be talking with Emily Mercurio all about geospatial technology, the power of maps, and conveying complex information visually. It's a really fun conversation. You're not going to miss it. So make sure you hit that subscribe button, and I'll catch you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening. Connect with Aaron on Twitter and Instagram at AaronWatson59.
Something and go after something, and how you're thinking about it and how you're like in the act of it right now is going to be really valuable. And I think that also that it as you're comfortable sharing the stresses, sharing the warts associated with that as well, like not misportraying it as all butterflies and gumdrops. Like I'm recording this on a Friday afternoon and I just got off a red eye, and like this is the grind of entrepreneurship. This is like the unsexy reality of it. And that honesty, I think, is not only really valued by the audience and really valued by me, but it's part of the mission of the show, is to really prepare people for that stuff. Like we had another interview with someone who basically talked about, you know, I got into business because I loved this specialized thing, and then I started the business and I hired people to do the thing that I loved, and now I'm this like manager. So it's like those type of stories, like I didn't get that in school. I didn't get that in the Career Resource Center. So that's in general what we're after, but at the end of the day, it's your story that I'm after more so than anything else. So
okay.
Make it happen.
Sounds good.
Cool?
Yes.